before today, because Tuesdays are when we like to get our weekly dose of medicine, often with a whole lot of help in the background from none other than neuroscientist and science health powerhouse, Dr. Leela Landowski joins you now. Hi, Leela.
Hey.
Thanks for coming in. Also, along with Leela, Wendy Groot, the CEO of Epilepsy Tasmania. Wendy, thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for asking me.
Leela, why don't we start with the sort of the neuroscientist question? Let's get technical here, all right? This is what they call a Dorothy Dixer. What is epilepsy? What's going on?
So epilepsy is what we call a neurological disorder. So it's affecting the normal activity of the brain. And it's diagnosed based on the symptoms, which tend to be these recurrent, unprovoked seizures. And we know that about every 33 minutes, someone's getting diagnosed with epilepsy.
Wow, every 33 minutes. So what actually is going on, though? I mean, I've heard this term brain, a storm in the brain. Is that at all accurate?
Yeah, it is. It's like this overactivity of the brain in a certain part of the brain. And I think if you think of the brain as being like an orchestra, right, and the different parts of the brain are playing their own different tune, you know, they're all serving their own specific function, then it all comes together as this beautiful song that is us, right? And in epilepsy, sometimes parts of the brain are forced to play essentially a different song, right? It's playing not only just a different song, but it's playing it really, really fast, like a storm, in this synchrony, and that's when a seizure happens. So, you know, we have lots of different parts of the brain that are doing, you know, serving one purpose or another purpose. One might be controlling our muscles, one might be sensing food, it might be sensing our balance. But during a seizure, it's like all of these functions are kind of being made to play the same tune. So rather than doing the thing that it was meant to be doing, it's, you know, playing the wrong song, okay? And I think when people often think of seizures, they think of convulsions, like twitching. But there's actually around 40 different types of seizures.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if that seizure affects the whole brain, maybe you'll lose consciousness. If it just affects a certain part of the brain, maybe you'll find your body having these involuntary movements, for example, or you might find yourself staring off into the distance, or you might even find yourself freezing and not moving at all. And, you know, think about it like this. If your eyes are suddenly being given a pattern of instructions that the muscles are meant to have, right, well, the eyes aren't going to be able to respond to that, right? So, you know, maybe instead of doing their job, your eyes might be staring off into the distance. So I think we can think of it in that sort of a way.
Wow. Wendy, can I come to you? Wendy Groot, CEO of Epilepsy Tasmania. I mean, I asked that question. I put the question right at the start. You know, what would you do in the situation where someone was having one of these seizures? I mean, what are the most important things for us to be aware of if we see this happening in somebody else?
There's a number of things people can do. One is to make sure that the person is safe. So if, for example, their seizure is one where they're walking around, you just move the obstacles out of the way. If they fall to the ground, then you don't hold them or tighten them, put a pillow under their head or a blanket or your shirt, your jumper, do things like that. If they're in water and they've had a seizure, you must call 000. Even if you don't know if they swallowed water, because that can actually affect them later on and people can die from that as well. So you always call 000 if there's water involved, whether it's a bath, shower or in the pool.
So is this what they call? I'm going back to my first aid training many years ago as, you know, part of being onboarded. This is what they call the recovery position?
You do that next.
Okay.
So once a lot of that seizure activity has stopped, because you can't actually hold somebody because they can damage themselves. So you move them into recovery position, which is, yes, on their side. You never, ever, ever put anything in their mouth. That's a myth that used to be around many, many years ago. You continually talk to them. It's another myth that people think that they can't hear you. If you know their name, you just say to them, Wendy, you're having a seizure. I'm here helping you. I'll just keep talking to you while you're here. Your children are next to me with somebody else. They're safe, or any of those kind of environments. So, and then you wait for them to come out of the seizure, and then you need to check in with them to see. Unfortunately, when people have a seizure, sometimes they lose control of some of their functions. So there could be an embarrassing moment for them when they wake up. And some people, when they come out of their seizures, they don't actually know where they are or even who they are or even who the person is with them. So it's a lot of talking, a lot of calm, a lot of being safe and secure. If you don't know what to do or the seizure goes on for more than 3 minutes, we usually say call an ambulance.
Right. We often hear about people biting their tongue. That seems to be part of the sort of popular awareness. Is that a big risk?
People can bite their tongues, they can bite the inside of their mouth quite severely. So, yes, there can be some of those issues that do occur. So, yes, in some forms of seizures, yes, there is biting of tongues going on as well.
Mm. So, I mean, many of us, I mean, I've certainly got at least two people in my life who've got different types of epilepsy. Those of us with people in our lives with epilepsy, what would your advice be? Where would be the best place to start if we wanted to sort of learn how to support them?
So a number of things. Give us a call.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide...
Just Googling that number now.
Yeah. We're just providing services for families and for friends and relatives. We do a lot of work in workplaces. We advise people to download the seizure first aid poster from our website and put it up on their wall. You can actually make your home more safe. For example, if you've got sharp edges, go to one of the local hardware stores and get some soft edges to put on the corners of the tables and things like that. So there's a lot of things you can do. It's a bit like childproofing your home. You just do whatever safety things you can do to do that.
Mm.
Things like having the bathroom door open outwards and not inwards is a really significant one, because a lot of people can have the issues when they're in the bathroom.
Well, that number for the Hobart Office of Epilepsy Tasmania, 1300 852 853, of course, epilepsytasmania.org.au being the website. You will find it in your search engine. My two guests today, Dr. Leela Landowski, neuroscientist and lecturer, and Wendy Groot, who's the CEO of Epilepsy Tasmania. Leela, can I come back to you? Is this a genetic thing? Can this be an inherited trait?
Yeah, absolutely. So we tend to know more about the genetic causes because they're kind of the easiest ones to study. And if we think about the brain as, you know, the brain's controlling everything we're doing, right? And it's doing it using these electrical signals being transmitted by neurons. And what epilepsy seems to be doing in genetic cases is it's making those neurons a bit more excitable, more likely to be activated. But the brain is in this exquisite balance. So if you get that balance slightly off kilter, then that can result in a seizure, for example. But that's just one of the causes. So there's many other causes, for example, after a head injury, following a brain infection like meningitis, for example. Actually, the most frequent preventable cause of epilepsy that occurs in the developing world, not so much here, comes from an infection called neurocysticercosis, which is actually spread by tapeworms. So that's tapeworms that are found in undercooked pork. And I find this, you know, really interesting because we have a lot of religious texts that say don't eat pork.
Mm.
And, you know, I wonder if that's a way of protecting people from transmitting the worm and therefore potentially transmitting that as a cause of epilepsy.
Mm.
Strokes, brain tumours, all of these things can lead to epilepsy. But I think the overwhelming cause of epilepsy is unknown. About 50 to 70% of the time, we don't actually know what is causing it. So, there's a lot of research that needs to be done still.
Mm. Is there sort of anything interesting happening out there? Any sort of breakthroughs being made? Are we working on this locally?
Yeah, look, not so much locally, but certainly in Australia and around the world. It's a really tricky thing to study because, well, this is going to get a bit nitty-gritty for a moment here, but when we're studying any kind of disease, we need lots and lots of people with that same type of disease, right? That exact same pattern of disease. But once you know one person with epilepsy, you know one person with epilepsy. You know, everyone's presentation might be a little bit different. So it makes it really hard to develop therapies for them. So the reason why we know most about genetic causes of epilepsy is because we can identify which part of the genetic code is leading to that person developing epilepsy. And so what scientists have been doing, and again, this is a bit confronting, but people take that genetic code, pop it into something like a fish or a mouse, and then breed up lots and lots of those fish or mice, and then you've got this whole big population that you can then study in beautiful detail about exactly what's going on. But I think that's why we know so much about genetic causes of disease. But I think the exciting thing on the horizon is the use of iPSCs, or induced pluripotent stem cells, which, bear with me for a second here, that's basically when you take a cell from somewhere in your body, say like a cheek swab, for example, and you put it into a petri dish, and basically you bathe that neuron, or that cheek cell, with a bunch of hormones and growth factors that basically deprogram it and turn it into a stem cell. And then once you turn it into a stem cell, you can then reprogram it into a neuron. So all of a sudden you've got a cheek cell from a patient with epilepsy that you can then turn into a neuron, and then you can basically use that as a way of finding you know, potential therapies that might be individual to that particular patient. And that's really advantageous because it takes the genetic code of that particular person and that particular variant that they might have and allows you to investigate that in more detail.
So not to implant that new neuron in the brain, but to actually use it in the petri dish, as it were, to experiment on it.
Exactly, and understand what is happening to make that person end up with epilepsy.
Well, to both of you, I really appreciate you coming in to help shed light on, well, what is a far more common disease than many people, I think, probably realise. Any final words of advice from you, Wendy?
There's lots and lots of information on our website if people want to learn more. There's podcasts that we've created that are people with epilepsy telling their stories. There's one that's where Leela's talking as well, so there's lots of those. March is Make March Purple, so there's a whole campaign nationally around that. And if people hop on, just Google Make March Purple, it'll hop up, it'll come up, and you can look at ways you can be involved.
Well, to you both, Dr. Leela Landowski, neuroscientist, and Wendy Groot from Epilepsy Tasmania, thank you so much for your time.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
On ABC Radio Hobart, the time is 7 minutes.